So off we go.
Blog Talk Radio.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on. Da!
Hello, baby.
Yeah, this is the Big Bopper speaking. Oh, you sweet thing.
Do I want? Will I want? Oh, baby, you know what I like.
Chantilly lace and a pretty face and a pony tail hanging down, wiggling a walk and a giggling a talk. Make the world go round. Ain't nothing in the world like a big-eyed girl to make me act so funny, make me spend my money, make me feel real loose like a long-necked goose, like a girl.
Oh, baby, that's the one I like.
What's that, baby? But, oh, honey.
Chantilly lace had a pretty face and a ponytail hanging down, a wiggle in the walk and a giggle in the talk. Lord, make the world go round, round, round. There ain't nothing in the world like a big-eyed girl to make me act so funny, make me spend my money, make me feel real loose like a long-necked goose, like a girl.
Oh, baby, that's the one I like. What's that, honey? Pick you up at 8. And don't be late. But baby, I ain't got no money, honey.
Oh, all right, honey, you know what I like. Chantilly lace and a pretty face, ponytail hanging down, a wiggle in the walk and a giggle in the talk. Low, make the world go round. Ain't a nothing in the world like a big-eyed girl to make me act so funny, make me spend my money, make me feel real loose like a long-necked goose, like a girl.
Oh, baby, that's the one I like.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, welcome to episode 31. It is of the new Panic Room. I should say that in case you haven't listened before. You just happened upon us. Maybe you're looking for recipes or Martha Stewart, perhaps. Bill Cosby. I don't know. Whatever you're looking for. Not Bill Cosby. No, bad taste, Jim. It's the new Panic Room episode 31. It is... What day is it? It's Thursday, the 9th of February, 9:30 Central. And, yeah, we're on the... Again, it only seems like last week we were doing all this. Again, it just... the weeks are shortening or it's coming around a lot faster. But greetings, listener, and thank you for joining us. We've got a great evening of fun. Sadly, our second guest cancelled at the last minute because she's not feeling very well. Get well soon, Kendra. We have Chris Motts joining us in a bit, which is exciting because he's a great author. But it would not be the new Panic Room. It would not be Thursday night without, well, we know who. We know who is it? I don't know. I don't know. I've forgotten what her name is. I think nothing really. It's Xtina. How are you, my dear?
I was trying
to build you up there. Hang on, I've got your sound effect and everything. Here we go.
Yeah, you said it seems like just last week that we were doing this, and it was last week, though. We did the same thing.
Yeah, funny enough, it was. We did exactly the same shit, and we've done it for 30 weeks, you know, and it's just like...
It does seem like it was just like yesterday, though, that we did it. So it is, the weeks are going by really, really fast.
Well, no, it's not, because you get to the end of the week. I've always got work left at the end of the week. And what's going on?
Yeah, yeah. And then another week was by, and I'm like, damn, I didn't get that shit done yet. So, no,
yeah.
I'm I Do you want the truth or do you want me to lie about how I feel?
Could you lie about it, please?
Oh, I am feeling wonderful. It's going to be a wonderful evening, and I am so happy to be here. Did I do good? Was that good?
You were interesting. Let's see if you've passed the Stephen Hawking test on that one.
I'm sorry, but I am going to have to call bullshit on that one.
You see, there's no getting past Professor Hawking, so you've not been well. Okay. I think I said before, if you were a horse, they'd have put you down by now. You'd have been shot humanely in the face, to be honest.
No, not the face. Oh, my God.
Well, no, where else to shoot them?
I don't know, but not the face. No, I had the flu shot, and can you believe I've had the flu twice since getting the shot? So,
you do know what the flu shot is, don't you?
Well, yeah, why else would I do it?
Let me delve into my past as a biologist. I mean, basically, what we do is a mix of dead, dying bits of the flu virus. But of course,
so they inject me with the flu so that I don't get the flu.
No, that's fine because that helps you build your antibodies. However, what they do because of the length of time it takes, I think they have to cultivate it in horses or whatever or out of it, but it takes time to cultivate the vaccine. You are being vaccinated with previous year's flu viruses. Now, a little bit of biology about the flu virus. Each season, it mutates and it changes its protein coat. And the protein coat is what your antibodies click onto, yeah? So you are making antibodies for last year's flu virus, which is fine because they are still kicking about. However, you are not immune to this season's flu virus. So all it means is that you're immune to last year's, the years before, the year before that. This year, boom. And what is happening, obviously, is encouraging the flu virus to mutate, you know, more efficiently and faster. So you'd be better off saving your $15. And say again?
Is there any benefits to getting it then, or?
It will prevent you getting previous year's flus. I suppose, statistically speaking, it narrows the field as to the viruses you can be infected with. But, you know, if you come across somebody who was infected with, you know, virus that was common 2 years ago, you'll be immune to it because your antibodies will be there. Because of the nature of the beast.
Things.
Well, they don't because they can charge, $15, $20, $25 for a flu shot. It's funny, my dad, I mean, he's 90, you know, he has one every year. And I think as you get, you know, older, you know, it reduces the risk a little bit. But obviously, you know, it mutates for a reason. That's exactly why the flu virus does what it does, you know. It's no surprise. I mean, you have kids, I have kids, and they are just germ magnets. I mean, mine brings, you know, stomach bugs, flu, colds, head lice, you name it, she brings it home. and that's the nature of the beast. I just let my kids wallow in muck. Mostly because apparently that is good for their. They say having a dog is great for, you know, having pets is great for immune systems because it exposes them to pathogens and allergens and all sorts. I mean, we have, you know, as you know, we have a house full of dogs. We've always had dogs since my son was sort of 6 months old. So they have the constitutions of oxes, my children. Seriously, they're ill for maybe a day. She'll get a stomach bug and she'll shift it in a day. If I was talking to him, then I cannot remember the last time that boy was ill. Seriously.
Wow.
That's just scary. Now, it's like Damien.
Now, it's funny. I have two, and my daughter, you know, when you're first kid, you kind of baby them, and she couldn't touch dirt at all. She has so many allergies, it's crazy. Now my son, he wasn't even a year old, and we were at some redneck wedding. Don't ask. I mean, it's a horrible story. And no, seriously, there was a shotgun redneck wedding. It was the most embarrassing.
Well, he didn't.
I thought,
the groom didn't want to marry his sister then. I mean, you know, she took you like that.
I was
people.
Sure that we were going to see ourselves on TV and, like, you know, America's Most Wanted or something.
Awesome.
It was that bad. And my kid is on the ground pretty much eating, you know, mud, and he was just mm-hmm. covered head to toe in mud. And, you know, my daughter, of course, couldn't even get her pinky toe dirty.
Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I don't know. I don't even know if there was a point to that story because they both still get sick. So I
well, that's, yeah. I mean, I don't know with ours. I mean, you know, I yeah, no, it I mean, it's, yeah, you're right. We say with your first kid, you know, you sort of wrap them in cotton wool. By the time, I mean, you know, my daughter's my fifth. So she's
oh,
pretty,
wow.
It was funny. We went to we had a sort of a family weekend away at a lake house last year, and there was like a big. My son was fishing in this big sort of lake thing, and my daughter's there. She said, "Can I just paddle? I just want to paddle." I said, "Well, okay, fine." And literally, before we knew it, she stripped down to her pants, and she was rolling in the mud at the edge of the lake. And there was, I mean, there's alligators in this bloody lake as well. I mean, there's God knows what was in there. And she was literally happy as a pig in mud. You know, I mean, she loved it. And then, funnily enough, she was head to toe in mud. So what did we do to clean her off? Took her to a different part of the lake and swilled her off with the lake water. So it's like, because you get to that point where she, I mean, if she's whatever, she, and she was fine, you know, she's not a problem. Just, you know, it's, you know, I think these days, and again, I think this is a subject I've covered before. You know, people do they coddle their kids. I mean, it's just,
oh yeah,
my son's friend. You know, he's, you know, if he's 2 minutes home late home from school, his mum's ringing. Do you know where he is? Well.
No. Yeah, we're definitely raising a generation of weak people.
I know. He stopped coming round. I said, we don't see name redacted. We don't see him anymore. Why is he not coming? So, well, last time he came, you shouted at him. He was upstairs in the game room. My little one was in bed, and he was, because when they're playing the PlayStation, they get loud because they get, you know, mm-hmm. they're playing online and all that sort of thing. And he was, I could hear him through the house scream. So I just went upstairs and politely asked him to shut the fuck up. And apparently that frightened him so much, he's never been back. As you say, pussy.
Well, oh,
I mean,
yeah,
like,
right.
My kids are used to being shouted. That's how I never laid a finger on any of my kids, but by Christ, I can shout at them. And no, he said, "Oh, you frightened? Well, seriously, you know."
Yeah,
it's not like
I'm
it was,
kind of.
He knew what he was doing wrong, and I told him about three. It was the third time at least. I said, "Please be quiet, because Indy's in bed," and he was carrying his script. I could hear him in my room, which is downstairs and along a bit. You know, kids.
Yeah, I'm the kind of mom who mouths, you know, "fuck you" to my daughter every chance I get. You know, she'll look at me and I'll just,
yeah,
"fuck off." You know, I think it creates character, and you know.
Well, you know, it's funny. We have, because I'm by nature a foul mouthed oik. You know, we have that culture in this house, and it's funny. You know, the kids they've learned. I mean, they cuss and swear like you wouldn't believe in the house. Outside of the house, when they go to friends' houses, everybody said they are so polite, so well spoken. They never swear at school. They never in trouble at school because they've learned what they can and can't say. You know, they can say, my daughter will say, "It's fucking cold outside, Dad," and that's fine. But she would never repeat that. Out of the house.
I picture your house. Like, I used to watch the Osbournes, that show. I loved Ozzy and I loved his whole family.
Yeah.
And that's what I picture whenever I think of your house. I do.
Yeah, you know, we have a little dog that shits on the carpet, so we're not far off, actually. Not far. Yeah, Sharon and Ozzy.
Yeah.
I can see me being the Ozzy character, you know.
Sharon!
Sharon! Yeah, we'll have to see if we can get him on the show. Yeah, I love the Osbournes. I'm a big, big fan of Shad. I read her autobiography a couple of years ago. I actually bought it for my wife, and she read it and passed it on. And it awesome. I mean, her father was manager for ELO, and I'm a big, big ELO fan. But yeah, I mean, she's lived the life. I mean, she's been there, done that, and you know, and they're great. I mean, for all his indiscretions and the fact that he's he's obviously adult now, you know. He's a great guy, he's Aussie, you know. He's still Midlands guy, a Midlands lad, you know, from back in sunny England.
Aussie's great. Him and Alan Cooper are big fans, both of them.
Yeah, I mean, I aspire to that, but without being drug-addled, you know. I'm not going to wreck my brain with drugs and, you know, quad bikes, but, I don't want to do that. Apart from being, you know, deathly ill, how are you? What have you been up to?
You want me to lie or something? I've been doing absolutely nothing this week.
Make something up.
No, I don't want to. It's too much energy. Me and my son have both been laid up this whole week with the flu, and basically we're sitting in a room together trying not to die. That's basically what we've been doing. And it's, you know, kind of interesting in a way, but...
No, it's not. No. Sitting in a room and it's... No, that's not... Interesting.
I'm actually feeling a little better now, but next week
you won't be so quite so miserable.
I'm not miserable. I mean, do I sound miserable?
Not really. You're putting a brave face on. Bless you. Bless your heart. You're putting a brave face on.
What else can I do? So, you know, no, I have my I went to the doctor today and they gave me this cough syrup with codeine, and I feel really
The culture here, go to, I haven't been to see a doctor in, it must be, in fact, I can't fucking remember the last time I went to see a doctor. In fact, no, I tell a lie, last time I went to see my doctor was when my first wife was nagging the crap out of me to get a vasectomy. so that's seriously a lot of years ago, and I went just really to shut her up, went to see him. That is the last time. But the culture here is that it's, I mean, everything, oh, go take him to the doctor, tell him to go. You know, you don't go to the doctor for cough syrup, you go to fucking CVS, for goodness sake. They sell it there.
Yeah, you know, the only reason I really went my son needed a note for school, so I thought, you know, while he's being seen, I'll, you know. And they shoved
Can't you write a note for school?
Well, because after 3 days, they can't take just a mommy note, they need a doctor.
Seriously?
Seriously.
I'd like to see him try that with me.
They stuck the Q-tip up my nose and made me sneeze and then said I had the flu and gave me some yummy cough syrup and a note for him.
How much did that cost you then? Go on.
For the prescription?
Well, for all of it, for the consultation, the prescription, everything.
How much would that have cost your
insurance company?
Oh, I don't even know.
I would say at least, what, $200 bucks to see the doctor. The prescription was probably 30. Yeah. When you could have gone to CVS for $7 and sorted yourself out. I mean, it's just, it's terrible. It really is.
I didn't know, though.
my daughter's preschool. My daughter's preschool. Yeah, every time she'd actually bump in it, oh, take her to the doctor. Take the doctor. I'm not going to spend $200 to go to some quack to tell me that she's bumped a knee. I can see she bumped a damn knee.
My God, my crazy mother-in-law, she was like that. You know, anytime the kids would sneeze, she wanted to haul them off to the doctor. I'm like, you know, sometimes they just have a freaking cold. And if they have a freaking cold, there's nothing that, you know, you can do about it. You just have to let it run its course, which is even what I'm going through now with this freaking flu. I just have a note now that says, you know, it's okay for him
to
not.
Well, that's the thing
cool,
with flu. There is nothing you can do. No. I mean, they used to dish out antibiotics for flu, but I think they got wise to that, knowing that, viruses will kill us all in the end. You just drink plenty of fluids, keep yourself wrapped up and take things for the symptoms, you know, to ease the fever and all the rest of it and the aches and pains, but you just have to weather it out, you know, and don't waste your money on flu shots, people.
I mean we
need to bring Christopher on board, I think, because I'm bored with you.
I'm not feeling great today, so I could talk to you out.
Be quiet. Just be quiet. I can switch you off. You know I can. I can press one button, you're gone. Christopher, are you there, sir?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can, loud and clear. How are you this evening, sir?
I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm just waiting to see what's going on.
I hope Xtina's moaning and groaning hasn't whining hasn't depressed you like he's depressed me, for goodness sake. I mean,
oh,
really?
Whatever. You know, talking about somebody depressing people, you've talked about some pretty depressing, well, you know, actually, I can't say that you have. You didn't tell us that one, you didn't read that one poem that made us want to jump off a bridge. So I did not.
I came across, I made up a great little Valentine's poem, actually. You know what my poetry's like. I'm gonna recite my Valentine's poem, what I made up. I'm gonna put in my Valentine's card for my lovely wife. It's violets are red, roses are blue. I'm colorblind, so fuck you.
You know, that's not funny. My son is colorblind.
Oh, you need to take him back to the store. Yeah, trade him in for a hamster, gerbil. Gerbils are good, great little pets. You know, it's just everything's wrong with the boy.
Not everything, just some things. And it's funny because if he really annoys me, I just tell him to go study his color flashcards.
I tell you what, you could do. You know, if he's got wallpaper sample books, yeah. Give him a book of those and tell him it's a book of magic eye pictures. And see if you can spot the little bunny rabbit in the pictures. I'll keep him quiet for hours. Hours. So, Christopher, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thanks for having me.
No, more than welcome. More than welcome. You're here to talk about your book, The Farm. From what I've seen of it, the tagline is, again, I'm going to read the tagline. Brothers Emery and Frank are about to find out there are things worse than loneliness hiding out there in the snow. Things with teeth. Wow, the cover picture is, it reminds me of something, and I can't quite think what. You know what I mean? Maybe it's the Texas Chainsaw Massacre house, Ed Gein's house. When you see pictures of that, that's really. I mean, it's a who did the cover art for you?
It's actually a friend of mine does a lot of it. He owns a company that does web design, and he kind of agreed to help me out early on because I'm poor and I can't afford it.
You're a writer. We're all poor, pal.
It's a design company out of New Jersey called RDB Interactive, and he helped me design some of these covers just based on ideas that I had for the stories.
Uh-huh. Just the cover, mate. I think before I knew you were coming on the show, I'd seen it, I guess, on Facebook or Twitter, where I've seen it obviously being PR'd. And it's just that picture of that house on the cover makes me want to read the book, you know. We see a lot of books in this game, and it's not often one jumps out. In fact, at the end of the show, I'm gonna beg and see if I can get a free copy.
Let's see how the show goes first.
Okay, fine. Okay, Xtina, we got to be nice to this guy. You know, I want my free book.
I thought it reminded me of, or it gave me a real like John Saul feel to it.
Yeah, for some reason.
Mm-hmm. And I was a huge fan of his when I was younger, and. I think it was the book Nathaniel that for some reason, I want to read it too. It definitely looks interesting.
I asked for a free book first, so tough.
You did. You always get there before me.
Nobody sent me one, actually. I think I got...
You've gotten candy, though. I didn't get candy.
I got Mars bars off P.
I got books, though.
Awesome.
So I guess I'll keep my books.
That was great. So, Christopher, do you want to read your excerpt first, and then we can ask questions after? How's that sound?
Sure. Let me press a few buttons here and bring it up.
Fantastic. Go for it.
Just a little background. This is a little bit into the story. Frankie and Emery, as we know, have moved to this isolated farmhouse. They're kind of exploring their surroundings. They're down in the woods. And younger brother, Frankie starts telling his older brother a story because he enjoys making up stories. This story may have a little more truth to it than the other stories he has been used to hearing. So we'll jump in there, and hopefully my voice isn't too rotten.
You sound fine.
No, I picked the wrong week to try and quit smoking. All this. So, okay, here is an excerpt from The Farm. When Frankie wanted something, he'd hold on to it with iron fists. He was always like that, and it not only irritated me, but made me love him even more. He was tenacious. He knew what he wanted, and he did whatever necessary to get it. He shouted at me, stomped his feet, told me to sit down on my rock and be quiet. So I did. I knew this play all too well. Thunder rumbled in the distance, and the sky clouded over. The air stilled, and the forest quieted. I took my place on the ground beside him as a look crossed over his face. It was like Frankie had vacated and someone else had moved in. His eyes went blank, his jaw slack, hands folded neatly in his lap. I was drawn into his empty stare, like gazing into a lake where something lurked just below the surface of the water. Frankie started his tale again, but this time his voice had changed, matured, grown older and wiser. I didn't dare interrupt him. I sat back and listened. Whatever his muse had become, it scared the hell out of me. Frank and Emery's grandfather passed away in the winter of 1957, leaving his farm and all his belongings to his only son. Without warning, the family picked up their life in Red Hook and dumped it into a cavernous farmhouse in Buffalo. The boy's alcoholic father saw the land as an opportunity to cash in, with no regard for the farm's history or local importance. He pickled himself with cheap booze and let the land pay for his habit. With him out of commission, his sons picked up the slack, building their bodies and their minds and getting an early introduction to responsibility. Give me a second there. I just lost my place.
Use your finger.
Yeah, exactly. Frank felt right at home wandering the fields and surrounding forests, but the house is another story. It was too large, too open, too dark in all the wrong places. At night, you could hear yourself breathe, hear the creaks and pops of the old wood as the house settled into the earth. Sometimes, unidentified scrapes and thumps made you sink deeper under the covers, lying awake and wondering what went bump in the night. Frank asked his mother one morning if she heard the baby crying. He certainly heard it, and not only was there no baby within miles, but the cries came from the forest surrounding the property. It was the creepiest thing he'd ever heard. Listening intently as the shrieks echoed through the dark, nearly pissing the bed as he waited for the sun to breach the horizon. His mother informed him it was likely a fox. Frankie called bullshit. There was definitely nothing out. There was definitely nothing. Definitely something out in the woods, but it was not a damn fox. No matter what his mother said, no matter what his older brother Emery said, Frank wouldn't believe it. He envisioned what really made that awful sound, what lurked in the dark far away from prying eyes. He saw a beast covered in thick, black slime, scrabbling at the ground for worms and insects, squealing with delight as it mashed its late-night snack between sharp, crooked fangs. Thick, coarse hair was matted with greasy sludge, and long, sharp talons glowed with fresh blood. It rolled around in a thick layer of dead leaves, its beady eyes peering into the darkness, waiting for larger prey to present itself. Not a fox, not a chance. Shortly after they moved in, Frank paused in his bedroom door and gazed down the murky length of the hall, crossing his legs so he didn't piss in his pajamas. The house was as silent as a tomb. He crept down the hallway, his bare feet sticking to the cold wooden floor. 10 feet from the bathroom door, Frank stopped and held his breath. Something was in there. He heard its slobbery breaths and thick, guttural grunts as it rummaged through the cabinets, the contents being tossed around the room, clattering against the sink and the tile floor. A slight stink rolled into the hall, making Frank cover his nose and mouth to keep from vomiting. He ran to his bedroom and hid under the covers, noticing his bladder had let go and his pajama pants were soaked with cooling urine. Frank shivered beneath the bedspread, squeezing his eyes shut so tightly it began giving the headache. He heard the bathroom window squeak open and the sound of the rain intensified. He lowered the covers and peered into the hallway, the spasmodic flicker of lightning leaving burned images on his retinas. After a few minutes, he bravely swung his legs over the side of the bed and stood there, listening for any sounds that didn't belong. peeking around the door frame, he saw the light in the bathroom was still on, the pale glare bleeding into the hallway. The odor drifting from the bathroom was a tangible wall of foul-smelling horror, thick and noxious. Frank breathed shallowly as he approached. He stepped into the light and gasped. The white tile was painted with mud and muck and thick crimson drops of blood. The toilet was spattered with the same gory combination of all things nasty. Items had been rooted from the medicine cabinet, lying scattered on the floor, a tube of toothpaste, a bottle of mercurochrome, a bar of soap covered in thick brownish-black sludge. A ball of wadded-up toilet paper sat in the sink, soaked with blood and covered in green jelly that looked like snot. Frank tiptoed around the mess and looked out the window. The rain had turned the driveway into a quagmire. The lone light above the barn door swung in the wind, casting a yellow glow on the peeling red paint of the aged wood. Frank saw deep tracks in the earth, beginning below the window and meandering drunkenly to the small door in the side of the barn. The cows lowed urgently, banging around in their pens, terrorized by the presence of whatever lurked inside. Frank returned to his bedroom and quickly pulled on a fresh pair of shorts and socks. He sneaked down to the first floor, watching the shadows, tense to run at the first sign of company. The kitchen light was on, the room empty except for a bottle of whiskey and a half-eaten sandwich. Frank reached into the closet near the rear door and quietly removed his boots and a heavy yellow raincoat. He dressed quickly, glancing out the window, expecting to see something staring in at him. Each time, he was greeted only by darkness. Outside, the rain fell in sheets, hitting the ground and splashing up, soaking Frank's legs before he crept down the porch steps. Lightning forked across the sky, playing hide-and-seek with the thick black clouds scudding overhead. The barn seemed to be a million miles away, an island in the middle of a dark ocean. He quickly found the tracks in the mud, staring wide-eyed at the small black shape swimming and wiggling within. He looked up and immediately regretted it, fearing that whatever creatures rained from the sky would drop into his eyes and burrow into the soft meat of his brain. Frank pulled the hood of his slicker tightly around his face, watching the ground carefully, stepping around the puddles teeming with squiggling black shapes. He heard the fearful mooing from the barn, soon drowned out by another roar of thunder. It was so loud, he knew that something crept up behind him. It would be too late to react. He froze, trembling, forcing his eyes to part the darkness to catch a glimpse of what was beyond. He never felt so alone or so watched. Frank gasped as the large barn door began opening, screaming on rusted hinges and spilling a sickly yellow-orange light into the night. It illuminated a swath of the dark field where he imagined those things lurking, waiting to run from the shadows and tear him apart with filthy, bloody claws. He turned on his heels and ran back to the imagined safety of the house, splashing through the mud, no longer caring what swam beneath his feet. The kitchen door slammed behind him as he ran across the room and up the stairs, leaving a trail of mud and water in his wake. He tossed his soggy boots and raincoat on the floor and jumped back into bed. He didn't move again until well after sunup. Something very strange had happened that night, but Frank made it back in one piece. There was no evidence of the tracks in the mud, nor of the creatures that rained from the sky. The bathroom was clean, not a single thing out of place. Frank thought he'd imagined the entire thing, if not for the trail he'd left behind, and what he found on the porch steps the following day. A single, sharp, yellow tooth.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
The end.
Wow. Awesome. That beautifully read as well, sir. That was fantastic.
It was
very,
really, it was so well read. And we actually
so
had
atmospheric.
He just kept going. You know, we have time tonight. We're not rushing.
Oh, I know. You
were
trying to make me read the whole damn thing on here.
We could read all of it, and then I wouldn't
everyone
have to
get
it for a free book. Exactly. Exactly. No, that was great. That was very, just as I imagined it would be, just from the cover, you know. I like that. I mean, is this your, you know, your life's love as a writer, the sort of nasty, hideous, blood curdling, greasy, drippy snot things in the night, or is
yeah,
this, I mean,
the things out there are not pleasant things.
Mm-hmm.
You're not making friends with anything creeping around in those woods.
No, no. Again, it's tapping into, you know, everyone's fear of, you know, dark, dingy shadows and what could be lurking, you know. And
yeah,
I think what I like about this bit specifically is, I mean, it eats into your imagination. And a lot of it, you know, is, you know, how it plays on Frank's mind. You know, I think what your imagination tells you might be there can sometimes, a lot of the times, be a hell of a lot worse than what is actually there.
Right, right.
Which I think as writers is what we tap into. I think you've tapped into that beauty. I was living that, to be honest with you.
Wow,
yeah,
thank you.
I probably won't sleep very well tonight. Thank you. Yeah, thanks a
How
bunch.
How do you think I
Booker.
Think
I... You have to live with it. But do you not find that once it's out and it's on the page, that it's out of your head, or do they tend to stick around in there?
Certain things will come back to me. I mean, the novella was kind of a short piece. It's its own little story. Other works I've done kind of have a carryover theme, and that's mm-hmm. because of that reason. You know, it's hard to get away from certain characters, from certain yeah. themes that I wrote about, certain stuff like that. So yeah, it does. Every now and then, it comes back to haunt you a little bit, and you often have to go back and write a little more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
it can
what
be,
I want to
it's
say
almost
about
like
that
an
James.
Exorcism. Sorry, say again, Xtina.
What I wanted to say to that was that, you know, for me, what I write, that's exactly what it is for me. When I get it out, it's over with. It's gone. I feel cleansed, and I can kind mm-hmm. of move on. And so I do use it, and I love to hear, you know, say it's kind of like an exorcism. I never thought about that, but it is, you know. And
yeah.
I'm glad they don't come back.
I think I get that, you know, largely. I'd probably say 95% of the time, once it's out, it's written down and it's out of my head. But, you know, Chris mm-hmm. said, I mean, there's always the odd one, the odd character that will just pop back, you know. Maybe mm-hmm. they're not finished with it. Maybe they're not on out yet, you know. And, you know, I've often said, you know, I would struggle to write, you know, a series, even like I could probably manage a trilogy with the right characters, but, you know, people write ongoing series, you know, is the...
Right.
How, you know, I would struggle with that because, let's say, once they're... But if they're a character that is, you know, big enough that you can't get them all out in one story, then I guess I can see how that works.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was, a long time ago, I used to be a huge fan of J.D. Robb. That's just Nora Roberts writing her futuristic series she had going on, and the last time I checked, I think the books were up to like 40 something. With the same characters.
Using the same characters. Wow.
Yep. And they.
But it begs an interesting
really
question,
books,
though. At what point do your characters become too much?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that is a fine line.
Yeah, well, I guess you can have too much happening to one character where it gets a little bit, you know. I get the same way. I mean, again, I'm a big Stephen King fan, but, you know, pretty much everything that happens in Derry, you know, and there's only so much can happen in, you know, one small town. You know, I like writing. I'm actually writing halfway. I'm lying a quarter of the way through a small town novel. You know, where it happens in a small town. I can't see me coming back to that town because, you know, everything that happened. It's not, you know, the sort of thing that is happening.
You would think
doesn't
the people
happen.
Of Derry would move by now.
I was
going to
say Derry should be empty, shouldn't it? And real estate would be so cheap because nobody wants to live there because shit's always happening. but, you know, I mean, obviously he's made a good living out of that, you know, but as he's gone into his later works, you know, it's Derry again, you know, it's okay.
Yeah.
Was it Castle Rock or whatever?
Stephen King, I've started reading The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon again. I don't know why. I just picked it up and, I lied about that. I do know why. I've just discovered a newfound love of baseball, and I thought that I might appreciate the book a little more now that I actually know something about baseball. So, yeah. That was a really good book. Did either of you read that book?
Sorry, which book was that? I wasn't paying attention. I'm sorry. What book was that?
Oh, my gosh. You weren't paying attention to me?
I have an attention. Sorry, I was actually looking at something. Something more interesting. So what book was that?
The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon by Stephen King.
Yeah, it's a great, yeah. It's a simple story. And again, it's what I was saying about Christopher's work there. You know, everything that is happening really is happening in the girl's imagination, very much like Gerald's Game. You know, the horror, the most horrific part of what was going on was in the woman's head, you know, and the human imagination really knows no bounds, you know, and what goes on in there is probably some of the most terrifying things that you can think of.
I think that was the scariest part of that book for me was when, you know, was standing by the window and she didn't know if it was really there or not. That part was so scary to me.
Well, yeah. Do you know what? Spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't, you know, a listener hasn't read the book, is that he explained that there's some escaped lunatic.
Yeah.
For me,
yeah.
He should have just left
it
hanging.
Scarier.
No, he should have left it. If you ever read the Exorcist novel, again, spoiler alert, you know, that leaves you at the end of it not really knowing whether it was all in the girl's head or it was a real possession. And I like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, Blatty just left that hanging. I mean, and King really should have done that with Gerald's Game. That was there somebody in the room? Was it not? That would have been all the more terrifying. The fact that he just sort of neatly explained it. A bit like Scooby-Doo. You know, it was the janitor and he got away with it. Hadn't been for the meddling kids, you know, and it did spoil a bit. One of his better books, I have to say. I only read it because Xtina told me to. I didn't fancy it because I thought, well, it's a woman tied to a bed, you know. But it was one of the most gripping King novels I've read in a long, long time.
Yeah, I really.
It seems like one of those novels that a lot of King fans don't often go back to. You don't hear a lot of people talking about Gerald's Game for some reason.
No.
And I've read it like 3 times, so it's definitely one that I've read.
It is a departure from, you know, things that go bump in the night and monsters and what. I mean, it's to be fair, it's a situation that could happen to anyone. I mean, I read a story in, I think, on some British online paper that I'd obviously keep in touch the papers from over there, and it was a, you know, people writing in sort of, you know, their embarrassing moments, which I know is something we're sort of picking up on the show. And basically a girl was handcuffed to a bed by a boyfriend, and then there was a fire alarm went. I think they were in like a student dorm or whatever, a student hall's a residence. Of course, he just buggered off and left her. And she had she was actually rescued by the fire department. They actually cut her loose because obviously they went through and had to account for everybody. So it does happen, you know.
Asshole.
It does happen. Yeah. I knew a couple many, many years ago who they're into cling film, and the girl had actually wrapped her boyfriend in cling film on their sort of playbed or whatever it was, and then her parents popped round. Just an impromptu pop round. She had to entertain her parents for 2 hours while her boyfriend's upstairs wrapped in cling film.
Oh, you know some interesting people. I love these stories. I do.
Yeah.
I'm like, I lead a really boring life.
For the avoidance of doubt, it was not me. It was somebody. It was a friend. All right.
Yeah, I'm asking for a friend. Yeah.
Moving on. So, Christopher, I mean, who? Where do you get your inspiration from?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, obviously I've been, you know, a fan of a lot of what we're talking about, the Stephen King stories, just a lot of classic 70s and 80s horror. You know, I do my own thing. Obviously I try and do everything in my own voice. But at the same time, a lot of those influences will creep into my writing. I think the ideas that I've gone with, and again, I mean, even, you know, reading interviews with other authors, you know, everything's been done. Yeah, in one way or another, everything has been done before. It's only a matter of, can I come out and do it better than it's been done before? I don't know if I've succeeded with that or not, but that's kind of the goal, is to always up the ante a little bit.
Yeah.
Right.
I think, I mean, what I try to do is, again, like you said, I mean, Chris, you're absolutely spot on, you know, that nothing's new. And he said nothing's new in, you know, movies, in books, in a lot of the arts, you know. But I like to take, you know, take sort of well-worn cliches and literally turn them inside out. You know, I will make a conscious effort to, you know, I don't know, if it's a vampire, you have a vampire that only comes out in the daytime, for example, you know, and just to turn the cliches inside out, because, you know, they do not glitter, people. A lot of people, yes, in our business, I read a lot of independent horror, I watch a lot of independent horror movies, and a lot are just, I think people say, you know, I'll write a, you know, vampire, a zombie, or whatever story. They just fall into the trap of writing what's been written, and because of, obviously, in this day and age, certainly with self publishing and whatnot, you know, they can publish it, you know, and whether it's good or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I mean, some are fantastic. You know, you get some works that you think, wow, you know, takes your breath away. And so why, you know, this is just equally up there with, you know, King and James Herbert and John Saul, et cetera, you know. But, yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of sort of, you know, monsters and demons and things that go crunch in the night, you know.
Demons and ghosts scare me the most, I think. Oh, that rhymes. I'm a poet and I do know it.
Yeah, you do know it because you've written some books and that. I'm no good at poetry, so I tend to just terrible.
I was just
awful.
I watched do either of you like Dean Koontz? I just watched and I wanted to read the book, but
yeah.
I happen to have the movie, so I watched Odd Thomas, and I liked it.
What?
Oh. You know, I saw that movie ages ago. I can't even remember what it was about. What was it about?
The guy who, he saw dead people, and he, I don't know. I just watched it, too.
That's a great description.
That was also The Sixth Sense, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it wasn't. And like, I liked the characters a lot. I loved Odd, and I liked his girlfriend, Stormy. And spoiler alert, I was devastated by the end. I did not see that coming. And when you find out what you find out, I almost cried. It was awful. Yeah. I know. I was very upset.
I must watch that again. I do. I know I've seen it because I remember the title.
Yeah.
But I didn't know it's a Dean R. Koontz story.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you saying,
yeah,
wow, I did not know that.
And
I'm
going
to watch that.
I don't know if they came out other movies, but there are definitely other books in the series. But no, I really liked Dean Koontz for a while there. He kind of went weird though, and different, and not quite as horror, but it was still good. Like
I
don't know exactly. I mean, he had like the crazy horror stuff for a while, and then it just kind of got weird. But it was still good. Like Dark Rivers of the Heart, that was good, and From the Corner of His Eye, they were just odd stories, but, you know, because they weren't like crazy horror, but they were still really good.
The one that sticks in my mind, I cannot remember the title, was literally, I mean, again, it was, I don't know, it was horror, but it was more sort of psychological horror. It was a family literally moving across country. They were driving across country to their new home, and they were being followed. They were being chased by some lunatic. And he built the tension on that. And it stuck with me.
Was that intensity?
It may have been. I remember it was just this. It was gaining. And it was just you could taste the tension. It was incredibly well done. Incredibly. Almost like the end was anticlimactic. You know, the build-up was so powerful. It was almost like
He had one called False Memory, and that one messed me up because it was like a psychological, you know,
was that the alien abduction
one?
Was that the alien a bunch of people who'd all got together and with men that they'd been abducted or something? Or have I just totally made that? Was that something else?
I don't know. know.
I probably just made that up. I should write that down. I'm calling dibs on that one, people.
It's a bestseller.
That would be good.
Though, it does.
To be fair, that's probably been done many, 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 many times.
Not by you, though. Not by you.
Oh, well, yeah. But you know, just remember what I said earlier about not doing the same old stuff, you know?
Okay, we have gone past the halfway marker here, and normally
we need
you have
to have a quick break because thank you. I was going to say I needed a comfort break, but I was being polite. But no, yes, I do need my wee-wee. So are you going to stay with us, Chris, or have you had enough?
Yeah, no, I'm still here.
Yay.
Oh, fantastic. Well, so hang about. We're going to play a tune, and I'm going to go for a wee. And we will be right back. Oh, sorry, do you want to do some commercials or something first, Xtina? Oh,
thanks.
You're just not bothered
my
with
voice
that either.
Is wonderful today, so thanks. Okay, let's see. A brand new press specializing in horror, bizarro, dark erotica, erotic horror, and dark poetry. Hellbound Books Publishing wants your best stories. Now open for novel, short story collections, and anthology submissions. Please pay no mind to the sulfur smell. Go to hellboundbookspublishing.com to learn more. In the mood for something steamy to read this winter, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com. And don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com. I made it.
Yeah, without not one cough as well. Awesome. You're going to have a slurp of your $230 cough syrup. I'm going to play a tune, and then we'll be right back. I do feel better for that, I have to say. Thank you for destroying the mystique, Xtina. That was just, you know, people think I don't want, you know, the listening public to know that I go to the toilet. You know, I just, you know, just.
No, I.
What?
Well,
you know,
Well, yes. To tell them, you know, how often I'm drinking. So I figure what's good for the
I suppose it's equal and opposite, isn't it? So, hey, you know, the little featurette I did a couple of weeks ago about, you know, how to write. It rang a bell with a lot of people. We've been asked a lot of times now, you know, the best way, you know, to write a novel. So, you know, for people who missed it,
right.
Well, here we go. There you go. It's that easy, people. You know, how to be a best-selling author. You know, obviously, any more questions, please? You know, people just write in, drop us a note, and, you know, we can play a lot more of that. But, it's one of those things, you know, I find, you know, when, in fact, I'm going to bring Chris in on this, you know, as a writer, I tend to get two responses, you know. I was saying actually before the show to Xtina, you know, that I'm not a big fan of social situations anymore. You know, because you tell people you're a writer, you get one of two reactions. One is just stony face silence. And then the other is sort of either, you know, oh, I always wanted to write, or I've been writing a book, or, you know, just that sort of thing. You know, it can't be that hard, can it? You know, and both of which are irritating, you know.
Yeah,
I actually had
definitely.
One person say to me, you know, it was actually a kids' party. All the grown-ups were chatting while the kids were running riot around somewhere else's house, which is great. And he actually said, you know, what do you ask? I'm a writer. And he just looked and said, I don't know what to say to that. You boring, sad little man, I almost said. I thought it. Oh, that's nice. Well, that's it. Just kill the conversation, you know, you dull bastard. But, you know, to be fair, the worst ones are I always plan to write a book, and then they tell you about it, and you have to nod and yeah, that sounds good. And then they sort of want you to say, well, I'll write that with you. I mean, the number of people, let's write a book together. Hey, let's not.
Let's not say we did.
Let's don't do that.
You know, I was writing with somebody once. The first time somebody ever asked me was about a year ago, maybe a little longer. And I was like, I've never done anything like that before, but sure, let's, you know, we'll go ahead and try. And, you know, he wrote the first chapter and sent it off to me. And I read it and I thought, I could do so much better. So I pretty much rewrote the whole first chapter and wrote chapter two and sent it back. And so I don't know if we could have ever called it a, you know, co-writing, but he had great ideas. It never came to anything because it was definitely
it is
fun
co-writing. Even if he's putting the ideas, I mean, I've only ever co-written screenplays to date. Having said that, I'm actually co-writing. There's some sort of contest. It's a 16-year-old lad who I won't go into details. Sort of got in touch through a previous anthology we were both in that sort of ended badly. But and he's a great talent. And he came at me with this. They're actually looking for collaborative works. For this contest, and I'm actually co-writing with him. We tossed a few ideas about. We ran with, as it happens, one of mine, because again, his idea. Again, you can tell. I mean, he's 16. He's got some great ideas, but his ideas were very, obviously, as I said before, you know, have been done before. You know, very sort of very. He's a lateral. So he's a literal thinker, and I'm a lateral thinker. But someone wants to settle on the idea, and we're sort of going doing the backwards and forwards now. I'm writing a bit, he's writing a bit, and it's his style is really good. you know, for a 16-year-old lad, you know, he develops that, he'll do incredibly well. But he's developing, he's working out really well. You know, I mean, actually, it's nice. You know, it's almost like a fun thing, a fun project. You know,
yeah.
I'm enjoying working with him. It's great.
I think the fun part for me was getting it blended so that it didn't feel choppy and it didn't feel like there were two different authors. I think that was the, you know, more fun for me.
Yeah, that's going to take some work in editing because at the moment you can see the joins. But, you know, I mean, it's I think our styles complement one another, which is good enough.
A
bit of, you know, a couple of runs through editing-wise, and I think it'll be practically seamless. And the story's developing because obviously, you know, when we came up with the idea, I immediately sort of, my brain planned out the whole thing. But of course, with his influence, it's going in different directions. And I'm loving that because it's like, you know, I'll log in and say, oh, well, let's see where it's gone, where he's taken it, you know, you know, and he's sort of edging more towards the sort of fantasy, you know, like Stephen King, Rose Madder. Where he ended, I mean, not his best, but where he ended up in a fantasy world sort of thing. You know, it's not what I would have written, and it's great. You know, I'm really enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. No, I actually really liked Rose Madder. I did. Although I thought it reminded me an awful lot of that Julia Roberts movie, Sleeping with the Enemy, without the supernatural aspect to it. And
he did not need that. He didn't need that at all.
No, it didn't. It really didn't. That was kind of strange. I definitely agree with that.
It's almost like he'd got the story of the, you know, the cop, you know, the husband following him and tracking her down, and then thought, oh, you know, I'm Stephen King. I really should make this supernatural. Didn't need it. Did not need that at all. It was up until that, you know, if you took that out, great story.
Yeah,
great story.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me.
Oh, she's suffering. Oh, bless.
She's falling apart on us.
Do you know she falls apart most weeks, Chris, to be honest with you? Usually through booze.
Hey, no, that's not true. That's not true.
It's usually through drink. Well, actually, you know, the accuser actually didn't have a drinking problem, and to be fair, she has no problem drinking whatsoever. So.
No, I've actually said that trying to develop a drinking problem. I've said that a few times.
It comes so easy, doesn't it?
I'm working on developing a drinking problem.
Well, good. So there you go. This is motivation for you.
I have aspirations, yeah.
It seems that drinking problems go hand in hand with writing in of any kind. I don't know what
you know,
maybe it's just me.
Yes.
Well, it's funny, you know. I read an article. Apparently, writers are as a profession is one of the professions with the most, you know, longevity. It's also one of the most you know, prone to alcoholism and suicide. So you've got,
oh gosh,
you know, you either live a long, long time or you drink yourself to death. You know, one of the two.
Yeah,
you know, I think everybody goes through phases where, you know, they're depressed and stuff. But I can actually say I have never thought about suicide. I've thought many times about killing other people, but never myself.
Well, that's suicide by proxy, really, isn't it? If I killed him, you know, my depression would be eased. So, you know, it's funny, and I think I've mentioned this before. You know, there've been times when, you know, the writing is struggling to come, you know, and there's a little voice at the back of my head, just have a little shot of vodka, just to oil the wheels a bit. You know, this is like 10 o'clock in the morning. You know, no, I'm not. That is a slippery slope. I don't want to be drunk by the time the kids get home from school, you know. So I managed not to do that, and it's there. So it's very strong. So you know, just it'll help. And no. So you have a Red Bull or something instead.
Right. So, Chris, are you up for a little game we have on the show called 11 Quick Questions?
Oh, boy. Okay. How quick are they?
Well,
I'm going to be reading them, so it depends on if I have a coughing spell, you know.
Okay.
They're not hard.
Okay.
They're really not.
You don't have a coughing spell. Shall I do the jingle?
Yes, please. Yeah, I'm waiting.
Okay.
And now, 11 questions.
Okay, here we go. What's your guilty pleasure?
Oh, Queen. As in the rock band.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Baked beans, ranch style or pork and beans?
Oh, not at all.
Puppies or kittens?
Oh, puppies, obviously.
What's your favorite lunch meat?
Lunch meat? Let's go with ham.
Ham is good. What was your first car?
Oh, my. A 1987 Buick Skylark.
What do you fear most, snakes or spiders?
No, I hate spiders. I absolutely
hate spiders.
Thank
you. Me too. Freddy, Jason, or Pinhead?
Oh, Freddy.
First draft, handwritten or word processor?
Oh, it's all word processor. I left the handwriting thing a long time ago.
I cannot. I can't even. I went to. Okay, we're doing questions. Favorite alcoholic drink?
Whichever one is closest.
Oh, I want that answer. Okay, and 11. One interesting non-writing related fact about you.
I have been a drummer with various bands for about the last 20 years.
Wow.
Awesome. Awesome. That's good. Any famous bands or anyone who we might have heard of?
Absolutely not. No. Mostly local stuff. It's been mainly a hobby.
That's really
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. Do you still do that?
Not in the last few years. Once I kind of focused on trying to get the writing career, you know, running, I kind of left the band behind. I'm not saying I'm not going to do it again, but right now I need to focus on this and try and make sense of it.
Right. No, I was going to say with the handwriting thing, just filling out paperwork today at the doctor's office, I was like, oh, my God. I can't even make out my own name anymore. It's gotten so bad.
Oh,
but
yeah.
How often do we write? I mean, you know, my boyfriend will tell me stuff like, did you write that down? Write it down. And I'm like, well, I did write it down. I just can't read what it says now. So it's written down somewhere, but I can't read what it says.
Do you know, I've always been the same. I remember, you know, when back in sort of middle school when we used to do handwriting tests and they would like knock a mark off for each, you know, handwriting error. And I would get negative marks, seriously. I'd get minus 10 on my handwriting test. And, you know, all those teachers, you know, just, oh, you'll never mind, you can't read his art. Well, tough, you know, I'm not... Yeah, I think word processors were actually created specifically for me.
Yeah, no, I had really great writing. You know how girls always did the real bubbly writing? I had the real nice bubbly writing, and it was really cute, but I don't write anymore at all, so it just gets worse and worse.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, occasionally I have to handwrite something, you know, whether it's a, you know, form to fill in for the kids' school or just a, you know,
horrible.
Something,
yeah.
The occasional thing. I mean, you know, I'm on like the second word and my hand's cramping up. You know, I have to print it because I think nobody's going to be able to read this. You know,
I'm like, holy crap, 6 pages.
I remember back in middle school, I had this thing with trying to write as small as humanly possible. I don't know where it came from, but I would write my name tiny letters. And my teacher would constantly take marks off because she couldn't read what I was writing. I don't know where the hell that ever came from, but...
See,
now,
I had the opposite. I had the opposite problem. I thought that the bigger I wrote, you know, I guess I was trying to fool people when the teacher would say you have to write a, you know, however many
pages.
You
gotta write 2 pages, yeah. Yeah,
and I would write, you know, pretty much 3 words on a line and because I wrote so big. I don't know if that ever... went by.
I think they probably spotted that, Xtina, to be honest.
But it looked,
probably
it definitely
spotted
looked
that.
It,
Yeah, I remember I used to write. I mean, I always used to write stories. And, you know, my teachers used to say, you know, I'm sure it's a brilliant story, but we've no idea. We have no idea. It's like, you know, 12 pages. You know, I'd write double what the other kids would write. And I'd write 12 pages that nobody could ever read, ever.
Oh, that's
including
so
me
sad.
Most of the time. It's just like...
There could have been some really good gems in there.
Quite possibly. But we'll never know. Like a lot of my shopping lists, you know, I'll get halfway around H-E-B and what is this on my shopping list? And clearly it's not something we can, you know, we can't live without because I just don't know what it is. No idea.
Oh,
the number of times I've come home with things on the shopping list not crossed off and I don't know what it was.
Oh, yeah. Have you ever left the house with and you take time to write out what you need from the store and you get to the store and you don't even have the list and... I've done that.
The list is on the kitchen table back home. Yeah, so you have to wing it. Yeah.
And then you get home and, you know, you bought $60 worth of crap and not even what you came out there for. And it's like a major item. You're like, damn it,
well,
now I have to go back out.
You know what I do sometimes? I'm fastidious. I write my shopping list through the week, you know, as I need something, right, I'll jot it down. And then, you know, I've got my list, and I think, oh, tin tomatoes. It's not on my list. We always need tin tomatoes. And then I got to a point we had 9 tins of tomatoes in the pantry. 9 tins, because I thought, I know, I'm really good.
Yep.
And I actually wrote on my shopping list for a couple of weeks, do not buy tin tomatoes. Because we'd have had a shelf full of damn things. And it took us ages because we don't eat them that much. But it's one of those things you always need. You always need tin tomatoes.
You know, here, it's spaghetti noodles. Spaghetti noodles, for some reason. People like to boil up the spaghetti noodles and just put butter on them and some, you know, Parmesan cheese or something.
Oh,
and
no.
So they're always...
My kids,
you know,
do
but,
that now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah, I don't really get it either. But
the whole point with pasta is a carrier for the sauce. So,
right,
you know,
right.
It's funny. So my boy tonight had a bowl of pasta with like I said, with I think just butter on it tonight. And I just put some sauce on it. No, it's all right. Well, ew.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's going to eat
boot
leather, you know. It's nasty. I don't feed my kids boot leather as a general rule.
I don't need anything butter on it. Butter in the same room, for that matter, because I'm just, yeah, no, my diet is absolutely awful.
Yeah.
Especially on writing. It's just, you know, beer and croutons. Like, just,
wow.
Just something random.
Oh, there you go. No, there's a breakfast for you, isn't it? Breakfast of champions.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. But I do like croutons. I mean, it's stale bread, I know that, but I do like croutons. It's funny because we have the odd health kit. You know, we get salads, so you get those prepackaged salads because the lettuce is chopped up for you. And so, right, I'm going to eat healthy. So you got your romaine lettuce and maybe some little red leaf stuff. And then you put the dressing on it, and then your croutons, and then your bacon bits and mayonnaise and a bit of cheese. You might as well have a burger, to be honest.
10,000 calories later.
1,000 calories. Yeah, think, I'll tell you what this needs. It needs a steak to go with it. And I'll do some fries while the cooker's on. You know, a bit of fries.
Oh, God. I'm getting hungry now. It's way too late at night to be hungry.
Are you
going to make it?
Don't die.
I'm doing well.
I thought she'd have tapped out by now. She's a trooper. She's
no,
a
you
trooper.
Know, when I was planning this episode, I had the embarrassing question or the embarrassing story all ready for Chris, and I was excited to hear it because he said he had a good one. And he already did the questions, but now I want the story too.
It's pretty rotten.
Oh, excellent!
Hey,
now here we go. I'm
gonna
sit back
late.
And enjoy this.
Well. I should preface this with a disclaimer of some kind, shouldn't I?
this is going to be good.
Let me question. My question to you will be the preface to this story, okay?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Do you remember
when you were younger, whenever it may have happened, your important first times, whether it be your first kiss, your first sexual experience.
Yep.
I mean, you remember those things.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yep.
Always
kind of a special place. You remember them. You remember the people you were with, the places you were.
And this
story kind of ties into that. I can't believe I'm even going to tell this. This is terrible.
Nobody's listening. You're all right. Okay.
one of the first times I got myself involved with a girlfriend of mine, I tried something for the first time, a sexual act, let's say, an oral sexual act. Okay.
Ooh, what could it be?
Wow. Yeah. So this was happening. I'm not going to give any details there, obviously, but this was happening. And at that time in my life, I never went anywhere without chewing bubble gum. I mean, I went everywhere. I always had gum in my mouth. I was constantly chewing bubble gum. And so somewhere in my mind, I didn't put two and two together and realize that maybe doing what I was doing at the time and bubble gum did not go together.
Oh my God, I love it.
So, I mean, the obvious messy end to this experience with a person. I mean, with a girl. She was a very pretty girl, nice girl. And
how much
and,
of her
and
hair did
whole
you
thing,
have to cut out?
That is exactly where this story ends up. I stood up after trying my best to make it look like nothing was wrong.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I stood up and I went to the dresser drawer that was near the bed, and I pulled out a pair of scissors.
Oh.
And literally, I mean, she looked over at me and she said, "What the fuck are you doing?" And at that point, I had to, had to trim.
Nice.
Yeah, no, it's not nice. It's not nice at all.
Oh, I
it's
think
an
that's
absolutely
the
terrible
best story
that now people are going to hear.
That is it. What happened? Did the relationship end there and then, or?
No, actually, we got about 3 or 4 good years out of the relationship.
Oh.
After that.
She was
yeah,
a trooper.
No, we lived together. I mean, the relationship, came to a natural
awesome.
End several years later. But yeah, no, we still talk, oddly enough.
Oh, that's awesome. That's the best story.
Do you reminisce about the bubblegum incident, though?
I mean, I've told close friends about this, and strangely enough, tonight when I knew that I had to be on here and I had no idea what exactly was going to be going on, if I have to say something really awful, I'm going to have to tell our story. I just seem to be okay with it, so now everyone knows.
Oh, that's so
brilliant.
Funny.
I love that. That's a good one. I think that's
really
one of the best ones we've had on so far.
Now, do you think of her when you chew bubblegum now? I mean, is this an
I'm glad you said that.
I don't remember chewing bubblegum ever since that incident, to be honest with you.
You were traumatized.
I was traumatized.
It would put you off Bazooka Joe's, wouldn't it?
It's painful. It is painful. For maybe more so for her than for me, but...
Oh, right. speaking, I have gotten gum caught in my hair once. My kid, he must have been 2 or 3 years old, maybe a little bit older, but he threw the gum and it landed in my hair, but I didn't even know it was there. And I'm talking to my daughter and I'm not even really paying attention to him. And all of a sudden he says, "Gum," and I hear snip, and he actually just cut it out of my, I didn't even see it coming, just gum, snip, and there's a chunk of my hair with, he thought he was doing him, me a favor, but he was pretty much balding mommy, and it was pretty traumatic, it was, because because I've always have like really long hair, so it, you know, when the chunk of it is gone. But see, sometimes that is a blessing when you have a lot of hair and it's long. You can kind of hide boo-boos like that. So it wasn't as bad as I thought, but I really was kind of freaking out for a little while. It was just the whole gum and snip, and I was like, what the hell just happened? You know?
Yeah.
So it kind of told me I have to kind of be aware of, you know, sharp objects when my son is involved, I guess.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think my daughter, I mean, going back a few years ago now when she was in preschool, had a very quick phase but of cutting her hair. I went to pick her up and they said, she'd got play scissors, but she got a scissor and literally cut most of the hair off one side of her head.
My
wife had to take her on an emergency dash to the stylist to sort of even her out a bit. Got her home, playing upstairs in her room. She only got the scissors out of her, again, the play scissors out of her bathroom cabinet, and went and did it again. and then she never did it since. You know, and it was just, why did you suddenly decide to do? I think at school the worst of it was she was also cutting her friend's hair as well. They were both doing it.
Oh.
I don't know who ended up looking worse. I mean, she was only like four. You know, bless kids. I'm not having kids. I have to say, I'm not. I'm going to take all mine back. I have to take them back to the shop.
You know, I say the same thing, and most people look at me weird or, you know, think I'm a bad mom, but, you know, kids are way more than they're worth.
Kids are horrible.
I'm on too much medication or something.
Children are terrible. They're awful people. They're nasty, horrible, grubby, disgusting little things. They're terrible. You know, sometimes you sit and look at the kids and think, well, you know, what could we have done with all that money instead of spending it on the bloody kids? You know, we could have been having a great life instead of spoiling it.
I remember looking at my son one time after he did something insane and telling him, this is the reason some animals eat their young. And I was serious.
If we were lions, I'd have eaten you by now, kiddo.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
I know.
But instead we have to feed them and clothe them for how many years? That's insanity.
it's sad that we are, I mean, it's biology, you know, we are programmed to reproduce and we just can't help it. It's what we do, you know, it's in our genes, literally, you know, and we just can't. And sometimes you look at them and think, what was I thinking? You know, I mean, to be fair, you know, you have one, fair enough, you don't know what it's like. But then people have more than one. Why, what, are you stupid? I mean, and I'm in that category. I've got five. I'm just not a fast learner, I'm afraid. So let's have, I think the thing is, there's something built in the human brain that makes you forget just how terrible they are. You know, if somebody said to you, right, well, I'll tell you what, why don't you have, you know, a little miniature human that for the first year will keep you awake most of the night, you know, sleep deprive you, drain all your finances, make you feel like crap, destroy your social life, your sex life, your adult life. What do you think I am? Am I crazy? I'm not going to do that. But you do, and then you do it again. You forget that first year. I mean, I know when we had my daughter, I mean, it was like 7 years between her and my son. And I'd honestly forgot what it was like to get up every 2 hours, you know, starting at, you know, pretty much the time your head hit the pillow, every 2 hours for feeding and changing. And, you know, I remember the first 6 months.
You know, I have to say,
my
daughter was a really easy baby, and we were on the same schedule. I'd get up and I'd feed her. We'd both go back to sleep, and she slept the night. She was just an amazing child.
You see, nature does that too, yeah. Yeah, nature did. The first one's always easy because that's why you have another one. That's why nature is like that. You think, oh, that was easy. Well, let's have a dozen. And then everyone after that first one is an absolute demon child.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened when my son came around. He was I like to tell him that he was a surprise, but more like an accident, you know, but he doesn't know that. So
we're not frightened of the word mistake in our house. My daughter knows damn well she was a mistake. She was, I still don't know how the hell that happened. In fact, there is a funny and very embarrassing story about that I may tell when it's my turn for an embarrassing story. You ask me how my daughter's done saved, and I will relate that story. It's a good one.
That's coming up too, by the way.
Moving on. write that down, Xtina. You'll not be able to read it in 2 weeks. So I'm just happy just sitting there listening to Xtina in the coffee now.
That's funny.
What I'm going to do, I'm going to get that sound effect, so on the odd occasion you've not got the flu, then I can just play it, so we've got some sound.
No, that's horrible. It'll give me pain just to hear it. It hurts to cough for this many days, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody cares.
That was me feigning interest and empathy. I'm sorry. I really did try that. I'm sorry. You're sorry you're not feeling that well, Medea. You've done very well, actually. I was half expecting you to be not here this evening, so well done.
Oh, thank you. And I want to thank Chris for being a good sport and sticking around with us the whole time. You were a great guest, and I will definitely be stalking you.
Thank you for putting up with all the nonsense. So where can we perform? Obviously, I'm free coffee. Where can we find you?
Where can you find me? I'm kind of everywhere.
Okay.
James, you're breaking up really bad right now. I don't know if it was your phone or not. So, yeah, we just want you to give a shout out to where we can find you online. Where our listeners can find you.
I do have a Twitter account. I have a Facebook page. Just search my name, Christopher Motz, on Facebook. You can find my author page. I have a Goodreads account, so people can check in there and see what I'm up to, which is generally just sitting up here pecking away at the computer, really. I do have somewhat of an internet presence, and that's really it. My social life has not followed. It hasn't been as exciting as I hoped it would be, but you could pretty much find me anywhere online, really.
Okay, and I'll get those links put up on our Facebook page as well, so people can find out where to find you. And I will definitely be stalking you again to have you come back on the show and see us, because you were a great guest. And again, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us, Chris.
Thank you.
James,
I appreciate
it. Demonic on us.
yeah. Somehow it all went wrong there.
we'll talk to you soon, Chris. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And now this is the time when James normally says to say goodbye, Xtina. So goodbye, Xtina.
So I'm going to say goodbye, my demon voice. Goodbye.
Go!